Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're done with your Oreo?
Yeah, done with my Oreo.
Okay, good. Do you really know what happened?
The brother did.
The brother, that's what I thought too!
I mean, that seems like kind of obvious.
Hey, do you want to talk about death?
Yeah. I mean, not
mystery, that's murdery thingy.
Let's go.
Well, now I'm like...
Let's do it.
Now I'm like really excited.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
What if we get the call?
I know. I'm waiting on a big call. My sister-in-law is... gonna have a baby soon, but probably not really soon, but by next Wednesday at the latest. So, but it could be at any time. So anyway, if the call comes during this, we're just gonna like stop and then start again. So anyway, welcome to Mystery Murdery Thingy.
Yay!
This is a podcast. You might be listening to us on iTunes or
Spotify,
Stitcher, perhaps
iHeartRadio,
Overcast, any of a number of different...
When I had an Android, I used AntennaPod. That was really nice. That was a good app.
I don't believe I've ever heard of that one.
There's lots of independent podcasting apps,
there are
Mario.
Quite a few. Thank you, Pippa, for knowing about more of them than I do and putting our podcast up on them. what is that?
Your glasses are foggy.
I know. It's like weirdly warm in here. Okay, I'm just going to take off my glasses. So anyway, this is the podcast. I'm Mario. By the way,
I'm Chloe.
And this is the podcast where we talk about mysteries.
And murderies.
And thingies.
And thingies.
Yay. I'm going to go first. And I'm going to jump right in. So I'm doing thingy and possible murdery. So, because I'm doing two stories this week. Because I am doing a little special two-parter.
You are doing a two-parter. Okay.
Well, not technically a two-parter. It's two parts in one episode.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to confuse you. So, yeah, I'm going to do two stories, one for each pole. I'm doing some polar mysteries. And they are polar opposites in a few different ways that we'll get into. So,
God.
So this is in honor of, you know, the end of our winter, right, up here in the northern part of the world. And, of course, the start of the southern winter down with our friends in the Australia and other parts.
Sucks.
Their winter is just about to begin.
Their winter is what, 50 degrees?
Well, it depends on where you are, I guess. But where I'm going to be talking about, it's cold, because I'm talking about the poles. So we're going to start in the north, though, with the ancient Siberia. And it was a little less cold at the time, so we're talking between the 8th and 13th century CE.
Oh!
Yeah, don't fall asleep now that
I'm sorry.
You already told me not to put you to sleep, so don't start yawning now.
I'm sorry. Keep
going.
That's
okay. So this is the 8th and between the 8th and 13th centuries.
Okay, so this is a long time ago.
Common era, so a long time ago. There were a group of people who we don't know very much about who lived and died and were apparently naturally mummified in this, like, really, you know, now barren, frozen landscape up in northern Russia. So what we have, though, to, like, go on in terms of this like, culture is these mummified bodies that have been found ever since this discovery was made at a place called Zeleny Yar Necropolis in 1997.
Okay, so have they been, like, melting?
Not necessarily.
And people, and they're, like, showing up?
I think it was more so that they were just discovered. I'm not sure that it has too much to do with, like, warming necessarily. But it could have been. But in terms of, like, the mummification itself, that seems to have been triggered by the kind of, like, non-oxidizing copper metal that's, like, covering a lot of these bodies, which is weird. And the climate, which got significantly colder in that area around the 14th century. So this all kind of, like, started to come up more so in 2014, when there were a number of bodies in shallow graves discovered near the town of Salakard in northern Siberia. There were 11 bodies that were found with shattered bones or crushed skulls in this particular, like, little area. And there were 5 male adults that had been naturally mummified and were covered from head to toe with these copper plates. And they were also wrapped in reindeer, beaver, wolverine, or bear fur.
Oh.
So the bodies were kind of, like, covered around this. No, just variously.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So one man in particular kind of stood out because he was, like, buried with an iron hatchet and a bronze belt buckle with a bear design. And that bear design kind of, like, sort of kind of a recurrent theme.
Nice.
There were also 3 infants that were also found mummified. Ooh. I know, it's kind of sad. Wearing copper masks and bound with copper hoops.
What?
Yeah, we don't really know, right? And this is kind of the mystery. Like, what is this all about?
What is it? A ritual? Do we know who, if this was indigenous people or who they are?
I'll kind of discuss that a little bit. Okay. So they were also all pointing toward the nearby Gorni Poloi River. So there seems to be some significance to all of these things, right? What they also found at the site was a number of bronze bowls originating in Persia, which is interesting. And, you know, they did some, like, further investigation into this, another set of remains in, like, 2015. And those were a little bit different. They were completely covered in thick fabric and birch bark.
What's that?
Like the bark of a tree from a birch tree.
Is that the white ones?
I'm not sure. I think so. So this formed, like, kind of a shell or, like, a chrysalis almost, you know, that the bodies were contained in. You know, if we're thinking, like, what's the significance of this thing, right? That's, like, one possibility, I guess. You know, kind of, like, needing to be in this, you know, preparation for, like, the next life or something. I mean, that's, like, a credible, you know, hypothesis, just what the fuck this could be about, right?
Commonly found in other cultures.
Exactly. These kind of things are like, recurrent in culture. So initial, like, MRI scans and stuff weren't really enough to get a good idea of what was going on within this, like, shell of the fabric and bark. So they did eventually open up the shell and found that the mummified remains of a young boy were inside, aged around 6 or 7, wrapped in animal fur and equipped with a bronze axe, a bear-shaped pendant, and a number of metal head rings, like around the head. So, yeah, it's this idea of being, like, covered in metal and fur. It's just, like, comes up with a number of these bodies.
That one I'm thinking, like, royalty or some kind of fighter.
I mean, that's what you would think, is that the person was of a higher caste or class or somehow, you know. I mean, that's what it's speculated in my source as well. It's just really hard to know, right? But, I mean, that's a fair extrapolation, I think, for sure. So it was later determined that, you know, through a number of different, like, analyses, that the boy had died from worms stemming from eating raw or undercooked fish.
Oh.
Which apparently was, like, a staple of what they would feed to children in some of the cultures around that area at that time. So it wasn't uncommon or anything. DNA analysis, though, which you would think, right, like, okay, you do some DNA analyses on these bodies and figure things out, right? That's not so possible with these, though, mainly because, one, the bodies had been in ground that had been thawing and freezing over the years. It's in this sort of like median area in the polar northern polar region, and also because of the birch bark resin, which had extensively gotten into the bodies and was corrupting the DNA, you know, not making it usable somehow. I'm not a fucking scientist, as I'm wont to say. Obviously, there were, some significance, right, to all of these things. The bear, which, sidebar, I think is kind of interesting, right? Because Russia's always been kind of, connected with the bear, right? That's, like, a symbol of Russia.
Sure.
Russian symbology and stuff, even, you know, into the modern day. So it seems interesting, you know, that it seems to have gone back to this, like, Russian provincial spot up in the far north, you know.
Is there a bear on their flag? No, I'm thinking of the Californian flag.
Yeah, that's the California flag. The good news is that a lot of these grave sites have actually not been looted, even though they've been there for, like, hundreds and hundreds of years, right, and have, like, precious metal inside of them. We'll probably find out more. But, you know, where a lot of these analyses and stuff ended up, the articles were from, like, 2015, 2016. So it's actually an ongoing investigation. So I think we'll find out more. But they think that these people were probably a culture that originated in the Mediterranean and migrated up through Russia to that, which, you know, just based on the little bit of, like, Wikipedia reading I've done about, like, ancient Russian history and China and, like, that region of the world, it seems fairly plausible, like, that there were trade routes and movement of peoples through that area, even in, like, ancient times around this time. That's my first story. That's the northern pole of my polar mysteries.
And then we're going south.
Now we're going to the extreme, as far south, in fact, as you can go. Because this little murder mystery, possible murder mystery, is set at the South Pole. So this one is quite different. This one is probably, possibly a murder mystery. So we'll see. So we'll get into it here. So, talking about Rodney Marks, who seems to have been a pretty awesome guy, pretty tragically, because clearly this isn't going to turn out well for Rodney, right? Because, yeah, obviously. So, let's talk a little bit about him, though, and honor his life, first of all. So, he was an astrophysicist, an Australian. Seems like a really great guy. I would have loved to hang out with this guy. He seems really cool. He was known as being really brilliant. Apparently people just, like, said that about him, like, without, you know, prompting. And he showed an aptitude for science really early on. He attended a prestigious private school in Geelong, in southern Australia, where he was from. And he eventually got his PhD in physics from the University of Melbourne. And sort of developed a career as a radio astronomy astrophysicist.
A what?
So he did this kind of astronomy called radio astronomy, reading radio waves from the wider universe, right? There's a lot of astronomical phenomena that give off strong, sometimes really strong radio waves, and it's a very common form of astronomy to utilize those. And it specifically works well in the South Pole, because it's very cold there and very isolated.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I mean, I'm really into that kind of stuff, so I just happened to be into it. This is part of why I would have loved to hang out with this guy.
Nerd.
We would have had many nerd alerts going off. So he was pretty cool, though, as well, actually. He was a surfer. He played the guitar in a band called the Changelings. And he even had a band there at the South Pole Station.
Oh, nice.
Called Fanny Pack and the Big Nancy Boys.
Love it.
Great name. Great fucking band name. And Rodney was apparently everybody's friend, right? So apparently there's these kind of like cliques, at least at the time, you know, at this time, this is around 2000. Okay. At the South Pole Station, where there's like the scientists and then the mechanics and then like the support people, you know, and it's kind of like you hang out with your crew. You don't hang out with the other people. That wasn't the case for Rodney. He hung out with everybody.
I love that.
He was an astrophysicist, so obviously he was around the scientists. His eventual fiancée, Sonia, was a scientist, but also worked as a skilled mechanic. Mm. He would drink and play poker with like the support people. He was friends with everyone. And he would even give an informal astronomy class for his fellow Polis, which is what residents of the South Pole Station are apparently known. I didn't know that. So I'm going to call them Polis. So anyway, Rodney was no stranger to the southernmost point on the Earth at the point, you know, that we're going to kind of eventually get to, right? Eventually, he would spend 2 weeks at the South Pole in 1994, spend the overwinter time in 1997, which by the way, the overwinter time when they're at the South Pole Station is February to October.
Oh, fuck that.
That's the winter.
Fuck that.
That's when you can't leave or go there. Yeah. So that, just so you understand what we're talking about here.
No, thank you.
So by the year 2000, it's a Conan O'Brien reference. If you're old like me, you'll get it. So by the year 2000, Rodney had been hired on to spend another winter at the Amundsen-Scott Research Station, which is what the South Pole Station is known as, along with his new fiancée, Sonia Walter, who, by the way, played bass in the, what was it called again?
The Fanny Pack.
The Fanny Pack and the Big Nancy Boys.
Nice.
She was one of the Big Nancy Boys. Presumably Rodney was Fanny Pack, I suppose. Right. So anyway, they fell in love, just before the summer season ended. You know, and she quickly signed up to stay another winter to be there with Rodney. To start, the winter off right, and to kind of celebrate, this kind of tells you a little bit about who they were. She dyed her hair green. He dyed his hair purple.
Nice.
He often would also wear dreadlocks, apparently.
Nice.
So he stood out among the other scientists. Let's say that. They got engaged during the early weeks of the winter over that year in 2000. But tragically, this picture-perfect polar romance was not meant to last. And I don't mean to make light of it. So because, unfortunately, Rodney Marks is known as the victim of what became popularly known as the first South Pole murder.
But the murder's in question, yeah?
Correct.
Okay.
But it is popularly known as the first South Pole murder. There's kind of an assumption that it was murder, but as we'll see, it's not that clear, actually.
Okay.
So, yeah, it all kind of started on May 11th, 2000. Rodney was kind of not feeling too well throughout the day, especially when he started walking home from the observatory, which was about a kilometer from the base. He told his fiancée, Sonia, that he felt ill to his stomach, was having issues seeing during dinner that night. Hmm. So he went to bed early at about 9:30, which was uncommon for Rodney. Apparently, he was kind of a life of the party guy, too, as you can imagine. So over the next day and a half, Rodney's condition got progressively worse. He visited the doctor, Dr. Robert Thompson, the only doctor there, apparently, on the base, three times over the next 20 hours or so. Rodney was really freaked out, you know, not only because he didn't know why he was sick and was getting sicker, but also because he was in the most remote place on Earth. They're 1,000 miles from McMurdo Station, which itself is 2,000 miles away from New Zealand, Christchurch, which is the nearest civilization. So, yeah, this is as far away as you can get from anywhere, other than maybe in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So, obviously, he's not feeling, you know, too well about that either. And he also may have been haunted by some previous sort of disastrous incidents at the South Pole Station. Famously, a Russian doctor was forced to give himself an appendectomy during a winter over in 1961. Yeah, and Dr. Jerry Nielsen in 1999, so just before this, also diagnosed and treated her own breast cancer with supplies that had been parachuted in.
Wow.
Yeah. So
those are some badass doctors.
I know, right? Like, those are the kind of people that agree to spend 8 months in fucking the South Pole. So Rodney had, of course, the added stress, though, unlike those two, of not knowing why he was sick or what the hell was going on. So he awoke at about 5:30 a.m. the next day on the 12th, vomiting blood.
Oh.
Things were getting really serious. He reported a radiating burning sensation emanating from his stomach throughout his body. His symptoms continued to pile up, more and more of them, and Dr. Thompson could not explain what was happening. He wanted to consult with other doctors through a satellite link, but there was a lengthy delay as they waited for satellites to align and the Earth to spin, because, of course, when you're at the South Pole, you don't have good access to satellites because, you know, for reasons of geometry. And I'm not sure because I'm not a fucking scientist. So while they waited for, you know, Dr. Thompson to be able to consult with the other doctors, Rodney was given a sedative and went to his bed to try to sleep. He could not sleep, as you can imagine. He continued to vomit blood, and in a panic, rushed back with Sonia for the third time to the only doctor to which he could go. But that was all to no avail, unfortunately. Soon after arriving back at Dr. Thompson's, Rodney's heart stopped, and the volunteer EMTs on the base were alerted and called, but they could not revive him. Rodney was dead at 32, my age, on May 12th, with the cause of death a complete mystery. One of the first responders on the scene, and his friend, Darren Schneider, wrote the following after Rodney's passing. Quote, "We did everything we could, but Rodney did not come back. He had friends around him at the end. We have no idea what happened." Close quote. So Rodney's remains, of course, were to be flown to New Zealand to do an autopsy and everything, right? They could not do it there. However, they first had to wait till you could actually fly out of Antarctica, because it is so cold that if a plane were to touch down there, its fuel would freeze and it would not be able to move again.
Oh, nice. Cool.
So it physically, literally cannot be done. They had to wait about 5 months for that window to open. So Rodney's body, rather, was placed in a makeshift casket created by his friends. And after a brief ceremony at the South Pole, was stored 5 feet under the ice until summer. Almost half a year later, Rodney's body was finally flown to Christchurch, New Zealand, for the first autopsy. That postmortem concluded that Rodney died from methanol poisoning.
I was going to say, what poison was it?
Yeah, so you're very, very perceptive impression of you. Yes, it was determined that he was poisoned by methanol, which is similar to, of course, ethanol and alcohol, right? But it is way fucking worse for you, and it will kill you, even a little bit of it. So the coroner's inquest was formed jointly between the U.S. and Australia, but held in New Zealand, investigating an event that happened over 3,000 miles away more than 6 months before. So, good start, right? You can see where this is going. So the first mystery they had to solve was who the hell has jurisdiction in this case. Mm. New Zealand claims sovereignty over this whole area, including the proportion of the Antarctica where the events occurred. American authorities do not recognize that claim. There is an informal understanding that U.S. marshals can sort out sort of anything that having to do with, like, just Americans.
Was he American?
No, he was Australian.
Why are the Americans here?
Well, the Americans are the ones who run the base. and they were the ones who were employing him.
Okay. Did we just burst our ass in there like we always do?
No. This makes it complicated. You know, there's like multiple jurisdictions involved. So in the end, though, they did kind of figure that out and concluded that an initial investigation was going to be undertaken by a detective, Senior Sergeant Grant Warmald, of the New Zealand Police, the country's national police force. He was overseen by Richard McElroy, the Christchurch coroner, because ultimately the authority went back to New Zealand law stating that any body found on their territory should be investigated by the local coroner, the local coroner being 3,000 miles away in Christchurch, New Zealand. Mm. So that's how that kind of fell down. So after a number of hearings and statements and investigation through 2006, the only conclusion that DSS Warmald could come to is this, quote, "In my view, it is most likely Marks ingested the methanol unknowingly," close quote.
Oh.
Yeah, not too enlightening.
What? Keep going.
Yeah, so whether anyone else knew, of course, that Rodney was ingesting a fatal dose of methanol, one is left to wonder after that statement, because, like I said, it really doesn't tell you much. So the methanol would probably, and I do highlight probably, have come from a store used by Marks, by Rodney, to clean the telescope. So this is stuff that would have been around in some quantity, actually. Suicide, though, or accidental poisoning were mainly ruled out. Accidental poisoning just because these things were handled pretty carefully, and Rodney was known to be a very careful person about things like that. Rodney did suffer with Tourette syndrome. However, it was not severe, and he was managing it pretty well. I'm just talking about like the sort of suicide angle of things, right? Because unfortunately, in these situations, you kind of have to think about it, which is unfortunate. Rodney was also like in this budding romance. He was a burgeoning scientist who had a really promising career ahead of him. He had no financial troubles. There just didn't seem to be any reason why he would have taken his own, especially in this way, right? I mean, suicide just seems like a completely implausible thing to even, you know, entertain in this situation. So, anyway, the main contributing factor to the fact that this is a very much ongoing mystery up to this day is the reported non-cooperation of two parties. Raytheon, who contracted to do basically all the work on the base, and the National Science Foundation, which administers all U.S.-based research at the South Pole. Mm. So ultimately, the National Science Foundation is who is, like, in charge, according to, like, the Americans, I suppose. We'll get into a little bit more about them. So the mystery was also compounded, though, by the fact that a proper investigation is kind of impossible at the South Pole station, just because, like, how are you going to enforce anything? So, for example, there was no cordoning off of any scenes. There was no evidence preservation or logging. Things were simply cleaned up, thrown out, and life went on. Albeit much altered, of course, by Rodney's passing, but they used all the facilities. Sonia continued to sleep in their room. There was essentially no investigative work done on the scenes. So that's not great, obviously, in terms of trying to figure out what actually happened. So in a sense, the botched investigation, though, began even before that, with Dr. Thompson, who had a diagnostic tool that would have likely allowed him to diagnose Rodney's poisoning, but it was malfunctioning. And it was not repaired or kept in a usable state by Dr. Thompson. Who, as a side note, it said, I believe on Wikipedia, that he was never heard from again after 2006. I'm not sure whether that's true or not.
What is that? In what context? What
just
does that
from the investigation.
Like he went missing? Perspective. Or...
I'm not sure. Apparently, a lot of the people involved in this, and there were about 50 people on the base at the time, or the station, I should say, at the time. Apparently, people who were involved in the South Pole Station stuff at the time. They were the kind of people who tended to be difficult to find. So a lot of them were very difficult to find afterwards, which also hampered the investigation. For example, the investigators eventually sent out a questionnaire to try to gather more information. Out of the 49 that they sent, they only got 13 back. So, you know, yeah, you can see where this is going, right? We're not going to get to any... This is what the podcast's all about. It's a mystery, right? So anyway...
This one's frustrating.
I knew you were going to say that because it is. It's exceedingly frustrating. And when I was doing my write-up, I was like, Chloe's going to say this is frustrating. Because it definitely is. So the National Science Foundation concluded... I'm going to put that one in scare quotes right now. Concluded... I'm using that in a special way to say that it's not really right. So they claim to have concluded that Rodney died of natural causes, but would not provide any information from their internal investigation that they say that they did, which they also say established that, you know, he just died of natural causes. They said that right after it happened. Before any evidence could have been collected or done, yeah. Not a great look. So DSS Wormald has some thoughts. Quote, I am not entirely satisfied that all relevant information and reports have been disclosed to the New Zealand police or the coroner. Close quote. That's an understatement. Here's another quote from DSS Wormald. Quote, common sense told us there were only four possibilities as to how Rodney came to ingest the methanol. One, that he drank it willingly and knowingly with the intention of getting a high. Two, that he took it to end his life. Three, that he took it accidentally. And finally, that someone had spiked his drink, possibly as a prank, or even knowing that it would either make him very ill or kill him. Close quote.
But why methanol?
Well, it would have been readily available.
But like,
and it would have been certain to kill him.
I'm confused.
What are you confused about?
Why? Never mind. Keep going.
Okay, don't ask questions like why. No, I'm just kidding.
Keep going.
So his fellow polies were very skeptical that Rodney was murdered. As well, though, just as we're taking off, like, that all of the possible things that could have happened couldn't have happened is here. So Gene Davidson said this, quote, I never noticed anyone acting differently afterward, and I can't think of anyone who would have disliked Rodney that much or had anything against him or even had anything to gain by it. Close quote.
Right.
And sorry, this is why I didn't want to answer the why question, because there is no why. Like, in this case specifically... That is an impossibly to answer question. Like, even if there were some possible why to why someone would have murdered him, it's literally impossible for us to possibly ever know.
I don't know. I don't think he was murdered.
Who's to say? So, meanwhile, while all this is going on, the U.S. Justice Department was also apparently trying to get some kind of information, you know, from Raytheon, from the NSF. They didn't have any luck either. And the NSF said, sorry, we didn't have any jurisdiction over that. That wasn't our responsibility. They were not very helpful, apparently. They claimed that there were privacy concerns, again, quote unquote, that prevented them from giving out that sort of, you know, personal information that they wanted for the investigation. I don't understand. And they did not also produce any lab results or any evidence for the investigation. So, obviously, just like you and I, DSS Wormald was very frustrated and was left with little recourse since he didn't have any way to legally compel the NSF or Raytheon to help him to try to solve this possible murder or to establish whether it was a murder or not. And that's kind of central, you know, the central thing to this mystery. Was it a murder or was it not? So DSS Wormald here again, quote, had there been evidence of a criminal act, things would have been very different. The FBI would have been flown in, maybe even the Australian police, close quote. And it, yeah, reminds me a little bit of when of the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, right? Where these jurisdictional issues sometimes prevent a proper investigation from even, like, being established in the first place, because you can't say whether or not, like, what the facts are. So it's like, hard to even, like, start the investigation. So the investigation kind of lay dormant until December of 2006. The coroner's inquest was restarted, and they came to, well, I guess you can call it a conclusion, in September of 2008. They basically said this, quote, "Rodney Davis Marks died as a result of acute methanol poisoning, mm-hmm. probably occurring 1 or 2 days earlier, he being either unaware of the overdose or not understanding the possible complications of it," close quote. So again, using a lot of words to not say much. So yeah, we'll probably never know, which is basically what his father, Paul Marks, said. He said this, quote, "And I don't think we are going to try to find out any more in regards to how Rodney died. I'd see that as a fruitless exercise,"
yeah.
close quote.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's hard to disagree, right? But, DSS Wormald, one more quote from him, and he's not quite as pessimistic. Quote, "I'd like to think that if my children went to work down there and something went wrong, someone would be responsible for finding out what happened," he says. "I know Rodney's family wants to know why the machinery that would have diagnosed his illness wasn't working, and whether anyone will actually be held accountable, whether anyone even gives a shit. Someone should be required to give a damn," close quote. I actually really love that quote. Someone should be required to give a damn.
I mean,
right?
But I don't think there's much to go on to give a damn.
There isn't, but, you know, I mean, we've seen cold cases that have languished for decades, and someone keeps digging away at it, right?
I think the only thing here, if there is anything, is that the diagnostic tool wasn't working.
Yeah, there could be some possible, you know, I guess, legal implication. I'm not sure. So I wanted to talk about one more possible theory, but only it's possible. So this theory was floated by an anonymous Poli who kind of came forward to present this evidence, well, theory or hypothesis, whatever you want to say. So he presumably thinks that it could have been tainted liquor from not there, tainted liquor from somewhere else, that Rodney presumably would have bought and brought onto the to the station. So to bolster this case, there is the apparent fact that several polies, including Schneider and this anonymous poly, claim to have seen an exotic bottle of liquor with Portuguese writing and a shrimp on it with Rodney when he got back from a jaunt over to New Zealand just before the winter over began in 2000, before he passed. So this bottle was thrown away, just like all the other possible evidence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We could never possibly know. But it's hypothesized that it could have been, and apparently this is a thing, alcohol that had been improperly handled or whatever, or maybe even like intentionally spiked with methanol. Apparently there are about 300 of these deaths per year.
Oh.
Mainly tourists who buy, you know, unlicensed liquor in some tourist spot. Ooh. And it has methanol and it's of such a dosage that it kills them, unfortunately. And this may have actually been what happened.
I feel like that's the most plausible.
It's weird, you know, that there's no evidence for it, obviously, right?
Right,
it's
right.
Purely speculation.
That's why it's weirdly plausible.
But it's weirdly plausible. In fact, look what I wrote in my weirdly plausible theory. I literally wrote those words in my write-up because great minds think alike. So, yeah. Just as a little thing to end on. Until at least 2013, because that's when the article was from, Rodney's friends have kept an Australian flag flying at the South Pole, just like when they had the memorial there for him. This apparently greatly aggravates the National Science Foundation, but you know what?
Why? Fuck them.
Because they don't help in the investigations, and because they don't want people to remember this bad PR event.
Oh, that's bullshit.
It's extremely bullshit. So, anyway, that's... And again, it's all about, you know, honoring his life. And if he seemed like just a great person, it's so tragic that he died so young. But also just an extremely frustrating and intriguing mystery. Okay, so my sources. David Tormson at Listverse. Jessica Saracini at archaeology.org. An ancientpages.com page. Anna Lazowska at Siberian Times, the Rodney Marks Wikipedia page, and Will Cockrell in Men's Journal.
That was a good one.
Yeah. And then you think, yeah.
Okay, so mine's going to be really short.
Cool. Does it have a singing portion at the beginning?
No. I'm talking...
You know what I've noticed? We don't sing as much. Is that a good thing?
I don't know.
Sorry, go on, please.
I'm doing a medical mystery. You kind of inspired me to do a medical mystery. I'm doing foreign accent syndrome. So I'm kind of cheating. I'm cheating because...
Why?
I don't know. I don't think this is a mystery. After I did all my research and I did all the write-up, I was like, I feel like we know. And it's just a rare disease. And it's a thing.
Okay, well, tell me about it.
All right. So
we'll see how much of a mystery it really is.
I don't have faith in it.
Okay.
Being a mystery.
Okay.
So I'm cheating. So okay. Foreign accent syndrome, or FAS, is thought to be a neurological condition. So starts in the brain, where patients all of a sudden start speaking with some kind of foreign accent. All right. It usually occurs after some sort of like head injury or after migraine, stroke sometimes. And like I said, it's a rare condition. There have only been 62 reported cases between 1941 and 2009.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, how many again?
62.
Oh, wow.
So it's very, very, very
rare. Very rare, yeah. That averages out to what, like one a year?
About.
Or less than one a year.
So the term foreign accent syndrome was coined in 1982 by the neurolinguist Harry Whitaker. Neurolinguist. That's a made-up word.
You're a neurolinguist.
So, okay, there are two different kinds of foreign accent syndrome that have been established. Neurogenic and psychogenic. So, neurogenic is much more common, and it usually shows up after brain damage. So, from, like, a stroke or some kind of injury. Psychogenic is where they look at the patient and there's no identifiable brain damage, but the person has some kind of psychiatric disorder like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or conversion disorder along with this sudden accent.
Comorbidity.
What?
Comorbidity.
Yes. With this, the neurogenic is the one that's more common. But with the psychogenic one, it's one that, like, occurs during psychotic episodes, and sometimes it stays and sometimes it doesn't. So patients sometimes have trouble putting sentences together, like I do all the time, or put stress on the wrong words and syllables. So it's, like, weird. They talk weird. So vowels, okay, with these studies, they find that vowels tend to be the hardest and the one that people struggle the most with. And if their speech changes, it's usually the vowels that are mainly changing and how their mouths are shaped.
So it can be kind of like not a full foreign accent, but it's sort of like tinged with that foreign accent. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Oh, well, okay.
Or it's just like a modified version of the foreign accent, essentially.
Hold on.
Okay.
So this is why I don't think it's a mystery, because there's a... There's like a solid explanation. So brain damage affects the ability to control your tongue. So like that's what happens. It's they get some type of brain damage where they can't control the muscles in their tongue. There's lots of tension in the mouth, stuff like that. And so one of the things that's so interesting is, which I think you were kind of touching on, is that the patient seems to speak in an accent that they've never heard or experienced before. But the explanation for that is that there's problems with muscle movement and coordination. And that because of that, it changes the way the speech sounds. So when the new speech sounds are similar to those of an existing accent, the speaker can be perceived to be speaking with a foreign accent.
So, but see, that I think that is a mystery, because the mystery is that question, whether it is us perceiving it as a certain foreign accent, but it's really just that, like you're saying, this loss of muscular control is like changing their phonemes, essentially, right? Because the articulators are naturally changing in a way that's like completely unnatural. Or is it that their brains are somehow reverting to what the brain internally perceives as a foreign accent for some neurological reason? That's a mystery.
I don't know. And the thing about it is that there's two different kinds. There's the neurogenic and the psychogenic. And maybe it's
different for each.
And the psychogenic, well, there are lots of different, like, versions of this of this syndrome. Like, they're not all the same. Sure. And the psychogenic one doesn't have to do with brain damage. Only the neurogenic one does. So even if it's brain damage that are damaging the muscles, then the psychogenic one doesn't have brain damage. So where is that coming from?
I don't know. See, it is a mystery.
I was pretty satisfied with the... I guess I didn't think about it that way. So people with foreign accent syndrome don't speak with all the features of a foreign accent, but there's enough things about the way that they speak to make it seem like they have a different accent. Mm-hmm. So this is... Okay, yeah. So as you look at all of the cases, people with FAS are not described as having a single accent. It's interpreted by the person who's listening to them. So you could listen to somebody and be like, oh, it kind of sounds German. And somebody else could be like, I don't know, sounds kind of Russian to me or something like that. So the cases. There are lots of, surprisingly, there's like a good amount of like notable ones. But one of the earliest and most well-documented happened in 1941. So in the height of World War II, a Norwegian woman named Astrid was hit in the head with shrapnel during a raid. Mm. So she meets with a neurologist, Georg Hermann Monrad Krohn, so he looked at her and he noticed right away that despite her fluent Norwegian, she had, quote, such a decided foreign accent that I took her for German or French, end quote. Note that the Germans had been occupying Norway since 1940, so Astrid was met with a lot of hostility. Mm-hmm. People thought she was German, and she couldn't, like, go out and buy things, because, like, shopkeepers wouldn't, they'd be like, oh, we don't allow Germans here, and stuff like that.
Which this seems like in terms of what I've heard about this syndrome before, kind of a recurrent theme, that it causes social isolation and, like, distancing and like it seems to have an ill effect.
I'll get into that.
Yeah, for sure.
So another case, Michelle Myers from Buckeye, Arizona, went to sleep with a migraine and woke up with a British accent. So in the past seven, 8 years, it's happened to her three times. And the first time it was Irish. The second time it was Australian. You see what I mean? How it can be kind of interpreted. But both incidents lasted about a week. But in 2016, she went down with a crippling headache. And that's when she woke up with a British accent. And she's had it ever since. So about this was written in 2016, this article, I think. So about a couple years. So she also has a syndrome called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Which I don't know if this has anything to do with the disorder, but it's a condition which affects connective tissues, mainly in the skin, joints, and blood vessel walls. It's caused so she gets bruised really easily. She has painful joints that they're weirdly flexible and can dislocate super easily. So overall, it's like unclear to doctors what caused her her FAS, but they think it was caused by a hemiplegic migraine, which produces symptoms similar to a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Another case. In 2005, Leanne Rowe suffers a broken back and jaw after being in a serious car accident. So she wakes up in the hospital, and as her jaw starts to heal, she starts to slur her words, which eventually develops into what sounded like a French accent. But what's weird is that she's had it ever since. Like, her jaw heals, and then the accent stays.
Hmm.
And she's only one of two Australians with the syndrome. So she talked about how it's been isolating her and how, like, she gets made fun of, and that it's kind of, it's rough. Like, it's actually not a great thing. People think right. she's faking it, and yeah, it's,
Which, that is not a mystery, that whether they're faking it or not, but just right. by the way, like, they're not faking it.
Right,
like,
they're not.
This is a real syndrome. It is not a hoax or something, or
right.
internet, whatever, like, it is a real thing.
So, because it's such a rare disease, there isn't much we can go on in terms of causes and, like, super concrete system, because not symptoms, like, not everybody has the same ones.
Sure.
I guess the thing that really stays is that they have some kind of foreign accent, but all the circumstances are different. Either they're, you know, schizophrenic, bipolar, or they had some kind of brain damage, stroke, some kind of injury. It's very weird. And no one knows for sure what the underlying cause is, mm-hmm. only that it might have to do with how the brain processes speech patterns.
Right.
That's it.
Nice.
I
think it's intriguing.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
My sources were Wikipedia, an article from The Conversation by Lindsay Nichols, Australia ABC news article by Lucy Shannon, an Arizona ABC news article by Jason Volantin, and an article from The Atlantic by Julie Beck. Is it time for the best part of the fucking podcast?
Weird shit
in the news.
Weird shit in the news.
Ow, that hurts my vocal cords. Okay, go.
Okay, so mine's also from The Atlantic. Yay, The Atlantic. I love The Atlantic. By Ed Yong, and it is a science weird Oops. Shit in the news. And the title of the article is Exploding Aphids Plaster Holes in Their Home with Bodily Fluids. And yes, it is exactly what it sounds
what
like.
What are aphids?
Aphids are sort of similar to, like, ants or termites or bees. They have that sort of, like, segmented body, and they have that hive, you know, way of living as well. And the hive mentality, right, breeds quite literally this, kind of recurrent behaviors, right, that are self-sacrificing in these different, you know, for example, bees, when they sting, they die, right? Because it's for the good of the colony. It's for the queen. I'll die for the queen. I'm sure that's how they're perceiving it, right? They are apparently smarter than you would think. But anyway, this article is about this thing that aphids do, apparently, where if their home is attacked, right, and there's this large hole left in it, it must be repaired, because otherwise more predators are going to get in, it's going to dry out, so that they have to patch this hole. And the way that they do this is that they squeeze out about 2/3 of the bodily fluids contained
Ew.
In their bodies through their backsides, just explosively.
Ew!
And while they're doing that, apparently they also kind of mix it around with
Ew!
Their hives. So, all of this is in an...
I hate this shit!
It's weird. In an attempt to create a patch, almost literally a form of macroscopic scabbing. And what they found, what the scientists found after many years of working is, and this was specifically led, I believe, by, well, at least part of it, by Nancy Moran at the University of Texas at Austin, was that this mirrors exactly the process that the aphids themselves use for clotting within their own bodies. that the exact same enzymes and proteins
but then they just
are
do
used
it...
to make microscopic clots. Those are the same substances that are pushed out by them to make macroscopic
that's
clots.
That's gross.
It's cool. And gross. And that's my weird shit in the news.
Mine is so different.
Good.
Mine is like a, this is a nice little don't do drugs kids type of story. This is NBC, New York. NYC stranger linked to headless chicken mystery in wealthy Connecticut neighborhood.
Okay.
So there's this dude. And someone was literally dumping headless chickens and pigeons outside a home in some, like, super wealthy Connecticut neighborhood.
Hmm.
They were like, I don't, what the fuck is going on here? They said that it happened, like, randomly for the past year. Just, it's just, so they're finally like, what the fuck? Like, they don't know who's doing it. And they finally caught him. So he's 48 and he's from New York City. He was arrested. And they went through and I guess there's no known connection between him and the homeowner.
Weird.
Yeah, that's some, like, drug shit right there, right? Don't you think, like,
I
dude
guess.
Got high and was, like, chopping off heads and shit and was, like, dumping? I don't know.
And then went to some random fucker's, like, house in Connecticut?
It's weird.
I don't know. It's very weird.
I mean...
But it's also, like, it's not like he killed a person and he killed a chicken.
And pigeons.
But it does seem threatening. It definitely seems threatening.
But it's very...
I don't know.
I feel like there's more to this. There's some... I want to know what's happening
there's
here.
There's definitely more to it.
What's with this
what's
guy?
What's happening
is he okay?
in his head?
Right.
Exactly.
What's the motive for this?
It's like one of those stories. You know, it's like that story, if you recall, where the woman who gets on to flights without a boarding pass or a ticket, and she's done this several times... which is kind of alarming in and of itself. She has no ill intents whatsoever. She simply has, you know, some difficulties, perhaps.
And they just don't know.
She doesn't fit into our society. And but it's like, that's illegal. So anyway, this guy seems like he may need some help as well. I hope he gets it. Anyway, thanks for listening, you guys, so much.
Subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe. Leave us a rating. That really helps on iTunes.
We've got 4 of them so far.
Awesome.
Leave a comment.
Give us. subscribe
give
us to your, us on
give us
Patreon.
Your headless chickens. Yeah, Patreon.
Subscribe to us on Patreon.
Please.
Give us a buck. That'd be awesome. And then all the social medias too. Facebook, yeah. Instagram, Twitter.
Mario Tex 30.
Our Twitter's... a sad place.
I like tweeting articles. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.